Welcome to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Up Sessions podcast. Chess, what was that laugh for right there?
Because you just dove laugh. In,
did you? Yeah. Okay, cool.
I was smiling. That's okay, just good. That's good. Just what my face looks like.
Jess, I will say you smile a lot, which is wonderful. Yeah. Just means you're a happy person.
It's true.
So today we have a guest on. She's a very happy person. I think we just let's pour some batchy.
Batchy.
yeah.
Not to be mistaken.
What kind of coffee is a batchy?
Yeah. A batchy. It's like a batch brew, but like a fun.
Like
fun
a brewed, fun brewed batch, in a batch.
Yeah, so it's like a yeah. like a batchy.
Are there batchy. Non-fun batch brews?
Oh,
like why would you even do that?
Fun. Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
But I like it. Batchy. It's just fun to say.
A little batchy. Yeah.
Do you cheers coffee? Is that
yeah? Sure, we can. Cheers. Wow,
we that's haven't beautiful. Done that. On
cheers.
The pod. Yeah. That's first. Cheers.
All right. So I've been told by the coffee experts here that I'm supposed to make a very loud sipping sound. No,
no, you can't.
You can't. You can't. Can. It's a little hot, so be careful.
Oh. Yeah,
but well, yeah, hang on. Please.
I don't know if I can do it if it's really hot. I'm scared.
I think you're fine.
Oh wow! I usually hate just straight up coffee.
Are you being nice?
No, I'm not being nice. I like this.
Nice.
I can drink this.
It's good.
I'm not like cringing, you know.
For sure.
Kind of too stunned to speak right now.
It smells good too.
Yeah. This is a decaf. I think we mentioned that earlier.
Do you actually sip hot coffee?
Good question, Mark.
What?
We have a different of opinion here.
That's true.
Oh, I didn't know this was a controversial
no,
topic.
No, it wasn't controversial. Well,
kind it, of.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, I don't know. I to be honest, I wait like. Some of the baristas, so I like narrative.
Yeah.
Like they'll make my pour over and like 10 minutes later, they're like, hey, how was it? I'm like, I haven't even sipped it yet. I'm just hanging out. I'm just letting it cool down. Yeah. And then at like 15, 20 minutes, I'm like, this is perfect temp. And it's kind of warm. It's like on the higher end of warm, not quite in the hot range, okay. But it's kind of a little warmish. Sergio, on the other hand, like he'll drink it piping hot, ice yes. cold, yes. warm, the whole range. I'm like.
Yeah. 100%. Because I want to experience the coffee for all it's worth.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
It's a journey. You get it to is. Experience every step of the way.
Yep.
You're missing the beginning of the journey.
Wow.
He just wants a sweet spot. I'm like, give me the ugly, give me the sweet, and then give me the, well, why am I even drinking this? Mark doesn't care. He's like, okay, what whatever. My journey in drinking coffee at different temps.
I actually like this.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I'm shocked that you're shocked that you like this coffee.
Because I drink lattes.
Yeah.
Always.
Well, kind of. We'll get into that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been lied to this entire time.
I mean, you do drink, I guess, a latte is espresso with milk,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you do drink espressos with milk. We'll get into that. Yeah. But I think for all our guests, if you've been listening, there is some good banter going on here. And there's a reason for that because we literally all hang out at Narrative. It's pretty common. Jess will walk in. Marker's already on his computer working on stuff. Nice little connection there. So I think that...
It's the community office.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
With really high amenities. Or,
yeah.
With amenities. The best coffee.
Yeah, yeah. The best
100%.
Coffee.
Yeah.
So
not definitely not the Airbnb model. We still have to pay for everything.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. but... That being said, like as we get going, before we get into this, give us a short little breakdown. Who are you?
Yeah, sure. I am a digital product designer, UX researcher, graphic designer, digital artist, you name it. I'm basically an experimenter who will figure out whatever the hell it is I need to do to get something done. And so I've been all of those roles, any role that is involved in a startup, I can probably do.
Dang.
Incredible. Living.
That was holy crap. That was a very good intro.
Yeah, that was very, very like you just knew exactly, which is great because most of the time when people ask me what I do, I'm just like,
shoot videos.
Stop.
I know because I've asked you. Yes. I asked you when I first met you because you're on your computer. You're like in the community office of Narrative and you're like, click, 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 click. I'm like, oh, what are you working on? oh, you know, like stuff.
yeah, folks, I wasn't making that up. I do not know what to say when people say that. So that was excellent. Speaking of which, you work remotely a lot. And as we've mentioned a little bit, mm-hmm. but this is awesome actually having you on the podcast, because you're like not necessarily like this person who has sold their soul to the coffee gods, but you do value and enjoy tasty coffee, like right now. Mm-hmm. You do, I mean, visit Narrative, which has the best coffee in town, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll and so you definitely enjoy coffee, really good coffee, but at the same time, you have like, you're also very much so like an artist. You have all these other things that you're doing, which is awesome, because I'm struggling to put this into words, but like, instead of like interviewing like a coffee professional, yeah. or somebody who like has spent their time working coffee and, or being like a home barista enthusiast, you're somebody who likes coffee, but also like, you have like life outside of coffee, which is so weird to say, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's even cooler though, because you're like a coffee drinker and we met you at the cafe, mm-hmm. like you're a regular at the cafe. So it's like one of the best things we love about coffee is actually the relational aspects. Mm. And so that's whether that's, you know, one biggest thing that I miss about working behind bar, actually, fun fact, I worked at inside the Narrative Cafe before it was Narrative. Yeah. Like years ago, there was a cafe called Primer
in before there. You moved.
Oh, that yeah.
yeah, yeah. And so I used to work there actually, and I the one of the biggest things that I miss about working there was the human interaction with a bunch of all the locals, all the regulars. So we love that about coffee, mm-hmm. and especially doing that with now as owning a roasting company, we get to do that with people who are growing the coffee, who are producing the coffee. So relationship is like a really big thing that we really enjoy and like. That's why it's so awesome to have you on here, because we literally met you through drinking coffee. So.
It's cool to be here. It's nice to have an in-person, real human interview instead of a Zoom or like just be behind a screen. Most of my life is like this, right? Yeah. I'm just staring at a screen. And as a result, I actually think people are shorter than they are. And it's always a shock to me when I'm totally. Like, oh, right, I'm short, you know? But yeah, this is such a nice change of pace. Every time... Mm-hmm. When possible, I try to go meet people in person.
Yeah. I love it, because that's why cafe spaces are still so important to me. Like Mirror predominantly is an e-commerce business, mm-hmm. predominantly. You know, we have wholesale accounts that have our coffees in spaces, but we don't have a physical retail space. So I totally agree with what you're saying. And that's why I'm like, I love taking part in working at Narrative, because that's where I get to meet cool folks like yourself, and you know, small little chatter, taking your order, one, watching your coffee order progress.
It's been the same.
Well, it's been the same for, I mean, you've been going Narrative almost from basically from day one. Mm-hmm. So, but even within that, you went, I think, from like tame espresso to wild espresso, and that's like pretty big deal. I was just sharing this, like not a lot of folks drink wild espresso just like that, at least in the Bellingham location. So, and for you to add that into and see value to add that into your drink, I mean, that's awesome. So
I didn't know it was uncommon until just now. And now funny. It makes me wonder if I'm a weirdo.
No.
It's one of two options. You either get tame or wild. Yeah. So why aren't people mixing it up more?
No, I think, so I remember serving you a coffee that was like either Diego Bermuda's coffee. We talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. And you're like, whoa, you said something very like wild for normal people, but hit the spot for me, because I'm like, yeah, she's tasting what I'm tasting when I'm dialing in coffee. You were saying something this is like raspberry cheesecake. Like really is, like, because of our milk is very high quality. And then our coffee was dialed in. And I think that's what I remember to be the pivotal moment when you're like, okay, I'm going to stick with wild espresso for the most part. So that's uncommon. And to hear you just like Mark was saying, you visit a cafe. I believe you drink coffee from a pure, like, natural, not us as professionals who are trying to dissect it. And you tasted all that goodness.
I'm going to be totally honest with you guys right now. I actually don't like coffee. Wild. I like your coffee.
Okay.
And I have, ever since the experience of starting to go to narrative and getting the Tame and Wild and being like, oh, wow, these are both great, have been trying to go to cafes everywhere I go, and I travel so much. I saw your other podcast about how you were arranging your Airbnbs around the coffee shops you mm-hmm. want to try. I do that too, because I'm so hopeful that someone else will make as good of a cup of coffee as you guys do. And I have been disappointed 99% of the time. Wow. And at some point I will like check it off the list. I'll be like, okay, highest rated coffee shops in town, read the reviews, give it a shot, be like, oh no, cross that off. And then sometimes I'll just end up defaulting to Blue Bottle. Like I will not finish a coffee because it's so bad. And then I'll be like, I'm just going to go to a safe place. That's Blue Bottle.
Right? Do you like Blue Bottle?
I love Blue Bottle.
So yeah. Blue Bottle actually does a really great job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, contrary to maybe like some folks listening to this, but even though they're a massive company, they've somehow managed to hold on to like a good, decent amount of quality and like a strict order of how they do things.
Yeah.
And it's, so that makes a lot of sense, but also, folks, this podcast is supposed to be about something completely different, but
we're going a good here. Conversation. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I think with us, with what we're doing, the point, like, and we kind of lean towards a specific side of coffee that's a little more wild, that's a little more like funky, kind of untraditional. And the reason why we actually enjoy that kind of coffee, but a big part of like the way we think about it is, hey, we're not trying to tell people what to drink. Like, I'm not going to show up and be like, mom, you need to throw away all your dark roast and start drinking our coffee. That's not the point. It's more like, hey, if you don't like coffee, if you don't like everything you've already had, try this because it's very different and you might actually enjoy this.
Okay, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
Because I've never liked coffee before.
Dang.
That's y'all wild. Opened a narrative. Like that, I hated it. I thought it was disgusting. Like I would normally cringe, and you transformed coffee for me. So
that's wild.
Yeah. I've been confused ever since, but I do consistently when I'm in town, I am always getting an 8-ounce coffee latte in the morning from Narrative. Also, people around the world don't seem to understand the 8-ounce latte situation. They call it all sorts of things. They look at me like I'm crazy. Right. Yeah. And then I've been meaning to ask, like, have I been lied to this whole time? Are you telling me the wrong thing to order when I go places? They're like making me look like an idiot at other coffee shops?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think the problem is there's no across the board common communication in when people order. So flat white, cappuccino, latte, what is that? And why do we use that language? I mean, as a coffee professional, I don't understand.
Okay.
I mean, at Narrative, like, that's why we boiled everything down to espresso and milk. And you want an 8-ounce espresso and milk.
Yeah.
You can call that a small latte if you want. I get it.
Oh, I have been calling that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I get it. I think.
I mean, but you're not wrong by saying that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's more just because there's no necessarily standard hard set rules. Depending on which cafe you go to, once again, sometimes it'll sound very foreign and they won't really know what to do with it because it's just not normal there.
Yeah.
So, but you're right.
I've been told, no, you want a flat white. And I'm like, okay, maybe. I don't know. I'll try it. Right.
Yeah. Like, I think the weird thing for me is like 8-ounce latte seems way more like common and normal, but a 16-ounce latte is when I get flustered. I'm like, what do we do? We don't have a cup
that's
for
a
that.
Lot.
Like
yeah.
it's a lot, you know. Do I add more espresso? Like how do I balance this out? Like we don't, and that's why our biggest size is a 12.
Okay.
So basically, you get a small latte. But yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
8-ounce, you know. Yeah, that's wild. That's coffee culture for you, kind of like boiled down. But
that was fun banter.
That's fun.
Though.
Yeah, I'll take it. Like that.
Yeah, that was great. Jess, thanks for leading us there.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So let's dive into a little bit about what you do. And kind of like why we wanted to have you on the podcast and your expertise and knowledge in this field that you work in. Tell us a little bit about your work in Web3. How did you get into Web3? And can you share a little bit as to, in a nutshell, like what Web3 even is?
The definition for Web3 continues to expand to encompass all emerging technology So I would just call it that. I would just refer to it as emerging technology.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not too attached to any particular definition of that. And I like the fluidness of it because that means I get to work on all the new exciting things that people come up with.
Are there any core staples to emerging technology that you're seeing happen right now?
I mean, AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I was hoping you'd say something along those lines.
You can't escape it. It's, totally. Every minute of my day, every second of my day is just like AI this, AI that. I spend more time working with AI than I do with humans now. Which if I wouldn't have even thought of that being a thing at the beginning of the year. It's completely changed since February.
That's nuts. We've had AI conversations on here, but I've never met anyone who said that.
But I'm in the creative field, right? Yeah. And all the tools that have come up are there to support creatives in every type of digital medium. If you want to do video, if you want to do audio, if you want to generate images, if you want to do poetry, like all the creative fields are covered.
So when I think of AI in creative fields, you've seen this, we've all seen it. Yesterday or today, I saw my friend do this. So someone that I know is take a photo of himself, do the auto generate thing on Photoshop. And I'm like, holy crap. Like Ellery did it. And he's a friend of mine. He's on Instagram. And I'm like, dude, like, what the heck? Like, that's not like someone I don't know. Like you did that on your computer. I know that that's wild. So that's part of it that is very practical for like Photoshop that I get it, but that's also very limiting to what AI can do. Tell me more, like, what do you think about that? And also, what do you think about other opportunities? You and I have talked about ChatGPT a lot. Mm-hmm. So other opportunities with an AI that are a little bigger than just auto-generated backgrounds.
I mean, opportunities, if you are a creator, like you self-identify as, you could do literally anything. Things that you thought would normally be a huge budget, massive amount of equipment type of job, you can just do that on your computer now. The craziest thing I saw last week, I was in SF Tech Week, and someone had built an entire South Park simulator, trained it on all the episodes, had all the personalities for the characters, and it could just, with a two-line prompt, was like, create an episode about AI creating an episode of a popular TV show, right? Made the whole thing. There was a writer who was on strike in the room who asked a question after the demo was done. And she asked the creator, can you walk me through the process of how you got from script to this episode? And he paused and he said, well, the AI is generating everything. There was no script process, right? Like everything was created at the same time. There's the voices were even generated. The animation was generated. There wasn't this multi-step process like you're used to in producing a episode, usually super time intensive thing.
Yeah. I missed that first part. It was a what simulator?
South Park simulator.
South Park simulator. Yeah. Oh, dang. Wow. That's interesting.
That's wild. Because we've talked about this and we've used a little bit of ChatGPT in scheduling and thinking about like what episodes we want to have on this podcast.
Okay.
But nothing to that extent.
Oh, no, this is crazy. That is the craziest thing I saw last week. Insane.
Wow.
And that's saying something.
Yeah. No, that's insane. There's a lot that, I mean, my mind's going in like 100 different places.
I want to know what you're thinking.
But we're not gonna go there because I think we need
Bummer.
To.
I want to know.
Go elsewhere. You work for My Life to Share.
Yeah, I mean everyone knows.
Okay,
it's not.
Cool. I don't know.
Secretive about it.
I don't know. So you work for VaynerMedia.
Vayner3.
So like a branch of.
We're the emerging technology division. Beautiful. I like to refer to it as that.
Yeah. And so you also recently went to VCon. Gary Vaynerchuk has an NFT project called VFriends. Mm-hmm. And the conference that he started, which was only supposed to, is only going to go for, maybe as of right now, for 3 years. And the conference is called VCon, which is kind of evolved out of the VFriends NFT project. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of that, but you recently went. What was that like? Give us a little snapshot into that.
Disclaimer, I am not a spokesperson for VaynerMedia or Vayner3. All of my opinions are my own. VCon was awesome. And that was actually the first year I went because last year one of my friends happened to be throwing a party at the same time, which was insane. It, like, if he is throwing a party, you just go to the party. Yeah. And you don't ask questions, you show up. And so I had to tell my team, I was like, I'm really sorry, I'm gonna miss the first ever VCon. Yeah. I know it's historic.
It's and historic.
Honestly, yeah. Everyone who went said it was the best conference of the year, and people who go to all the Web3 events, they're like, that was the best one of the year. And I'm like, okay, all right, it's unfortunate that was at the same time, but also I had a great time, so I can't complain. So I was really excited to go this year, and when our team told me I had to book my travel out to VCon, they're like, oh, you got to go book our flights and book a hotel. And so I was like, okay, where is this? Indianapolis. I'm like, give me a second. I had to go Google where Indianapolis was, because that was never a thing that I'd ever thought of before. I checked it out and I was like, okay, I'll find some area. So what do you do? What do you do there? Right? Like, do some research. I like to usually like to explore art in
coffee
the area.
Shops, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I'm like, okay, get the lay of the land, because I hate conferences. I'm probably going to be there for whatever I have to do for work. And then I need to get the hell out, because I can't stand. I just can't stand it. I was there the whole time. It was so much fun. The only time that I skipped out was because my Airbnb host, who's super rad, asked if I wanted tickets to the Indy 500 test race. And I was like, oh, that's kind of like the thing that you do here.
Yep.
And so I did go do that. But the event itself, awesome programming, top-notch speakers. The group there, the people that that event attracts, were wonderful. I've never been anywhere, a whole stadium conference of people. I've never been in a group that big or any kind of conference where I could feel totally comfortable leaving my backpack with a laptop in it on a chair somewhere and walk away. Like, it was no big deal.
Yeah.
There was total trust in everyone there. That was the most giant safe space I've ever experienced.
Dang.
It was beautiful.
That's pretty extraordinary.
That's powerful. Well,
I'm also kind of surprised, but kind of not surprised.
Yeah.
Based off from just from, I feel like just the like what VFriends is about, the project is literally about very, I mean, that, like, they're promoting this, like,
be better.
Kindness. Just be community. Better.
Yeah.
I
got to talk to Gary earlier this week, and I had to tell him, I was like, you know, I came from the tech industry. I was in the tech industry for 2 decades. And you have restored my faith in capitalism's ability to create positive change in the world because of the way you've been able to scale this culture. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's a quote there. Mark is like, I can see all the neurons firing in his mind right now. He's like, we've talked about this.
Beautifully said.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. Yeah. Go, Mark. I'm letting you fire off. I'm like,
dude, I'm just taking.
I would never keep drinking straight coffee. You, this is blowing my mind right now. This is like when I had the latte from you for the first time. I was like, wait, I'm drinking a latte. What's wrong with me? This is so weird.
Yeah, it's tasty.
They're supposed to be gross. I'm so confused right now.
It's tasty.
It is tasty.
There's still holds on to some sweetness. This is like an improv mid-episode tasting of our batch brew.
The scent's really good too.
Yeah.
I'm just shocked, that's all. Like, normally I would be spitting this out. That's why I'm so surprised.
I'll take it.
That was genuine, unscripted right there. We did not pay Jess to...
I hate coffee. 100% hate coffee. Every time these guys give me something, for some reason I like it, but I genuinely hate coffee.
Oh, that's too funny. That's so cool. Good. Cool. That's too good. Yeah.
Alrighty. Yeah. Well, so you went to VCon. It's surrounded around, it's kind of evolved out of an NFT project. You work with emerging technologies, Web3, and Web3 has a piece of this NFT section of it. Did I just word that wrong?
No, you're fine.
Okay, good.
I think the world has stepped away from using the term NFT.
Yes.
Because it's clunky. And then people kind of associate it with like a thing that needs to be explained to them or something that they don't understand. When frankly, the future we're moving towards, nobody has to think about the underlying technology for this at all, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same way you use the internet, and you don't worry about how the internet works or the underlying infrastructure that's involved in that. You don't have to think about NFTs anymore. They are incorporated in a lot of things that companies do. You don't even hear about it, and it's fine.
Jess, I'm so glad you went there. So happy, because I didn't know how to get you to go there, but you did, which is so fire that you just went after it, because I 100% agree with you. Right now, there's a lot of buzz terms like AI. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going viral. It's becoming really trendy. But actually, 10, 15 years in the future, we probably won't, I don't know, maybe we will, but we won't call it AI. We'll just have it be, it'll just be the underlying infrastructure that runs pretty much the world. Like, for example, like, I don't know if this is the same, but like Apple in their latest keynote at WWDC was like, hey, this uses the latest like machine learning. And I'm like, cool, you just renamed it to something else, but you called it the technology that kind of uses the same infrastructure. Like, and same with, I think, with NFTs. Like, it had this big trendy thing, and then all of a sudden it cooled down and people thought it was a fad. But 5-10 years into the future, we won't be saying those things. It'll just be natural usage of that technology. So that being said, since we went there, let's take away then the concept of NFT. Now let's kind of focus in on the technology of it. What is the technology that is so beneficial about this?
Well, it's a permanent public record. There can be private records, but what a lot of people are excited about is this permanent public record, or of the chain of events that something has gone through. You can use this to track everything and make it a lot easier to verify the authenticity or the history of something.
Wow. That was actually very well said. I also love that you said the chain of events, because it took that big word and used it. You took the big word.
Blockchain.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it. But that's what it is. It's just documenting a chain of events in a very secure and transparent way. Yeah. Why is that beneficial?
Well, you could use that for a variety of things, like tracking the authenticity of art, of very high-end materials, of important documentation, like your health records, things that you don't want tampered, for the deed to your home. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are a real pain in the ass to track right now that can be done very easily with some form of blockchain technology.
I have a thought about that. So for coffee, we always talk, roasting companies especially, always talk about transparency. Mm-hmm. I mean, this sounds like exactly what the coffee industry needs, is more transparency that is secure on both sides, the producing side, but also the inbounding, like, roaster and cafe side. Mm-hmm. So with all of that said, like, y'all have brought a pretty good picture on what things mean without using the buzzwords. How do we then take all of these concepts and then put them in context of coffee? Whether you're a coffee farmer and producer, where wages are part of the major conversation around sustainability and being ethical in how we source our coffee, got to make sure our farmers are not only feeding their families, but able to build a future, right? So how do technologies like that make what we're trying to do better or easier? Maybe those aren't the right references, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of folks in the food industry use, let's call them NFTs. At this point, people call them digital collectibles or just tokens, right? Use that to track the path of the product from beginning to end, and actually let a consumer see that that path has not been altered or tampered with. So they have this very transparent record of the chain of events that have happened to the product, from when the farmer got it, how it was processed, when it was shipped to you, and then the end result, right?
Yeah.
So that's one way I see it done. I also see people use it to reward loyalty to a brand or to a store by giving them a trackable way of their consumer behavior, right? Trackable way to see that on their end, and then also get a little bit of a bragging rights. Mm-hmm. And then the company itself can use that data and reward its most diehard fans. Mm-hmm. And now they have a real way to show, like, yes, you own that token. It is highly unlikely that you're going to spend all this time to build up a certain persona and then, I don't know, give it to someone else, right?
Yeah.
So they can, with confidence, reward you with certain things that they believe that type of consumer would actually enjoy. Mm-hmm. So like the super high-end coffee experiences, like super exclusive stuff. You've seen that this one particular person has gone through the process of getting your POAPs. They show up for every single one of your events, or like maybe they get a POAP is proof of attendance protocol. Sorry, didn't want to use too much lingo there. Yeah. Have proof that they showed up in your store every single day. You know, like I'd have a pretty good collection at this point, right? Like if I was tracking my latte consumption, I would be able to look at that. You'd be able to look at that and be like, okay, wow, this is the person who always gets wild. What would we do to incentivize that person to, you know, get into our other products, you know? So that's on the company's side to figure out how to utilize the consumer data. But I would say you have more accurate, representative tracking of actual consumer behavior with this technology.
Yeah. So to tie that back also to VCon, just so we can get kind of bring some context to the listeners, because if you maybe have never heard of all these things, it might be a little chaotic.
Yeah.
But the fact that you have this, the VFriend project has a token or an NFT, Gary Vaynerchuk was able to reward you with an attendance to this conference.
Yeah.
That was your ticket.
That was cool. I was a little worried about how ticketing would happen because if you own a VFriends Series 1, you get access to all of the VCons, right? Like that's the plan for the next 3 years. Now, one more year, you will be able to go to this massive, super awesome event. And I was thinking, how are they going to do that? You're going to have to take out your phone at the gate. Like, what's going to happen here? No, they just know that the wallet that's holding that token, it owns it, right? There's a public record of that. They airdrop, AKA send a token, another token to the same wallet of the ticket for the event. So you, as the owner, you can actually sell that. You can pass it off to someone else. And this year they did something really cool where, you know, some people want to keep the ticket as a memento, even if they can't go. They could actually delegate the ticket without sending it to another wallet. So I could be like, oh, hey, my friend wants to get in. I have this ticket. I'm not going to deal with sending anything over the blockchain.
Right.
I just type in their email address. They don't need a crypto wallet or anything like that.
Gotcha.
Okay.
It was painless. I was very happy.
They had the ability to give the entrance to a friend, but they kept the collectible,
the memento, like I have this piece of art or token that shows that I was holding a VFriend Series 1 at that time, or whatever reason you want.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And so that's kind of what you're talking about in terms of having this thing that's, you can't necessarily tamper with it. It's there, it's transparent, and it can be used to either receive rewards if you're a holder of something, or as like a roasting company, we can reward you for holding something, something specific. And it also is this record of, hey, this is what everything related to this token is documented and untamped.
I think of it as a record of what a fan is willing to do for the brand. So it really filters out who are your most dedicated supporters, right? Because they're the ones who are going out to the events. They're the ones collecting the POAPs. They're the ones who care about having this record, this public, easily trackable record, because they're proud of it.
Yeah. So let's see. We had this idea. We've been chatting about it. There's nothing happening yet, but what if you could create something like that, that not only are we able to reward, for example, the person who buys the most coffee from producer Jorge Mendez, but we also have a token that is connected to Jorge and he gets rewarded.
I love that. I've seen a lot of social impact projects talk about setting up systems that will let end users somehow contribute to the original farmer or creator, or let them know that if they were purchasing a token from a collection, that proceeds will continuously go to that original farmer.
Yeah. A few thoughts that I get from that is one of the difficulties in coffee at origin is that the age of farmers is continually climbing, which means that we are not getting more we're getting less generational farmers. So yeah, the newer generation is not stepping up to the plate. One of the reasons is because of tech. So coffee folks who are farmers who are growing up on a farm, they're not picking up their dad's or mom's or their grandfather's farms. They're basically leaving the farm to go to the city.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if a project like this can actually impact the younger generation of farmers to take this tech and then bring it back to the farm and actually combine that whole idea of what they want in the city with what they can create, produce, and innovate on the farm level.
When you say it's because of tech that they're moving out, is that because they want to work in tech and it's a higher paying job?
Yes.
Okay, so it's financial compensation. Yes. That is the... Yeah.
It's also more more incentivized than being a farmer.
Yeah.
You know, there's more possibilities. And a lot of, I mean, not everyone. We have a few relationships on like coffee farms, so I can't speak for every single farmer. There's a lot of farmers who are like high up there, super smart. They're scientists.
Yeah.
That's a whole different level of farmers that we're talking about. But I see, I hear the stories of younger generations. They're like, okay, do I want to basically like tend the land or do I want to go work on computers? Mm-hmm. And the idea of moving to a bigger city, even moving maybe the possibility of the United States abroad, is way more alluring and way more sexy than staying at a farm. You see what I mean?
Right.
So I'm wondering if like, that's not bad. That's like, you know, personal life preference. Of course, that's not a bad thing. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is because this tech is so big, mm-hmm. so important, it's not only for folks in the United States.
Yeah.
It's much bigger than us, but it's also very beneficial to someone who is working on a farm.
So that makes me think of if this job is so undesirable that people are actively fleeing it, then wouldn't that be the kind of job that we would want to automate?
That's a good question. Well, I think coffee does have some, like, I mean, think about coffee picking.
There's some challenges with that because of the nature of the beast. For example, there's just difficulties with, like, for example, weather, that you can't avoid, but it influences the flavor of the coffee a lot.
Okay.
Picking is very challenging because a lot of this coffee is grown on terrain that you're like, humanly, it's very difficult to even stand on.
Oh, interesting.
So very putting steep. A vehicle in there or a machine is very difficult. This is not for everybody. I'm just speaking for a small amount. Well, not a small amount, but a specific. There are other farms that are more commercialized. They have a lot more automation.
Okay.
But a lot of the farms that we're working with, a lot of that is actually really challenging. Even though they have, in places where there could be more automation, they are implementing. But automation, the difficulty there, the automation actually costs cost a pretty penny to implement automation. And so I think, you know, in the context of this conversation, the incentives there are probably most likely security and financially. Mm-hmm. And so we can actually, how do we solve that through, you know, this kind of technology?
Yeah.
How do we actually build another layer of incentive, well, another layer of just another income stream to these farmers. At the end of the day, we hope that technologies can actually make, remove some of the friction points that we're dealing with. Tell us, what are some of the friction points that NFTs or this underlying technology is removing?
I mean, so I end up using NFTs, tokens, however you want to call it, digital collectibles, whatever. I use it for so many different purposes, for launching games, for campaigns. Like, we did this whole thing right after the Super Bowl for Crown Royal. That was awesome, where you could either claim a really cool looking crown collectible for yourself, or you could pass on the right to claim that to a friend, and you were giving up your right to take that crown if you did that. Mm-hmm. But by passing it on to a friend, you actually got something called a chain, like a little link in a chain. And if your friend then claimed the crown, that chain is done. It's dead. But if they also passed it on to someone else to show their gratitude to the next person, it would add a link to the chain. So now you have two people, two links in the chain.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was thinking, this is a pretty high touch game. Like, that takes a lot of effort if someone's actually trying to build a chain. So I'm thinking, okay, max maybe like 50 links in a chain if someone's really going for it. No, there's this NFT community or Web3 community called the Stoics, led by Gabe Weiss. He's this phenomenal artist. I love him so much. He's usually the guy I like to hang out with whenever I'm out at a Web3 event. Super sweet dude, rallied his community, got 444 links on that chain.
Wow.
And so now everyone on that chain has a digital collectible to prove that they were part of this massive endeavor. And then at VCon, actually, we got to reward him. Crown Royal rewarded him by, did you watch the Super Bowl commercial with Dave Grohl?
Yes.
It's a whole Thank You Canada campaign. And in that commercial, he is ironing a purple cape made out of Crown Royal purple bags. Because apparently ironing boards are from Canada. They were invented in Canada.
Oh, what?
I learned so much about Canada working on this campaign. But at VCon, they announced over the speakers in the stadium that Gabe was going to get the purple cape. And they put that on him. We did a whole photo op because his community came together and built the longest chain of gratitude. So that's like on the fun side. You can use these collectibles for creating games and then proving that someone took an action. That's something that type of technology is used a lot for, is proof of either proof of attendance, which is your PO app, proof of purchase, proof of completing some sort of educational program, so your educational certificate.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually completed a course, gosh, maybe like 2 days ago. It's like a machine learning for our executives course. And I wasn't expecting this, but at the end of it, they're like, oh, here's the PDF certificate. Or if you want the NFT for this certificate, email here. Not my favorite user experience. Like they should have just had a mint button, but what are you going to do? But the fact that they even knew or had thought to do that, then you have this permanent record of the things that you've learned, like the academic institutions that you have participated in and have actually reached the milestone of achievement where they would reward you with a certificate, right? Like, imagine getting your diploma like that.
Right.
So that's a bunch of different use cases right there. I also see this used a lot for token gating, which is what we call it when you have the NFT, your token or certificate in your wallet, and you show that to get into real life experiences. You can do it for online experiences too. There's like token gated musical playlists, token gated talks, concerts, you name it. Yeah. It's also used as a filter, frankly, for making that sure that the people who've earned this experience can access it.
Yeah,
and then if you have not, you do not.
Where my mind goes is, you know, somebody might be thinking is like, well, couldn't you do that with, you know, a ticket, an email, which is what we use, or like now on your Apple phone, you can double tap, you have your Apple wallet, it pulls up a pass and you can go in. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's like, yes, that exists, but there's actually a better, more streamlined way that's just has more transparency, has more, is more authentic and maybe untamperable. There's some value in that. And as you're naming those things, I'm like, it's crazy that we don't really think about them, but we experience that every day. Like some of the use cases, like, hey, here's like, you know, a diploma that you finished this course or this class, or you go to a concert and you get this ticket, or all these things, like they're very second nature, but there's, what I'm hearing is that there's a better, more streamlined way.
I would say a more permanent
way.
Solution.
Good.
So a lot of these things you're referring to are disposable, right? Yes. Like your ticket, it's disposable. You usually use these things for something you want to keep track of and have proof of that you did, or that you had or still have, and that you would then pass on to someone else, right? So it's not for everything. I don't think mm-hmm. you need to go crazy and tokenize your entire life, right?
Right.
A lot of what we saw come out of last year was tokens being given to people to show their affiliation with a particular group. So it was if you had pride in or felt like you were values aligned with and had pride in a community of people, you wanted to have that official token, and you would use that token, the image associated with that token, as a profile picture. You'd display it. You might even print merchandise with it on it, mm-hmm. use it on your Apple Watch, mm-hmm. whatever. You had the right to show that image, and that communicated to other people that you were a part of this group. And that conveyed some information about the values that you have, like what mm-hmm. sort of projects you like to support. So people want these things to be very public and very trackable. That's yes. what you would want to that use this sense. For.
Yes. And there, I think the basic forms of that, I'm more thinking like psychologically, is like, why do some of us wear like merch from a band or a coffee company? Or why do we, you know, have stuff like that where you can like rep your favorite mm-hmm. like person, speaker, or whatever it is? It's simply because like we want to belong to a group of people, mm-hmm. and when we can communicate that, hey, we're affiliated with this, this actually helps us join in on that community, and it's kind of uniting. There's a bonding factor there.
Yeah, yeah. Because I buy a lot of sneakers, or I like to think I do. And every single time I buy a sneaker, there's an authentication mm-hmm. Chip on it, or they right now StockX and eBay has one of those NFC, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. That you tap your phone and you yeah. get that. I mean, technically you can make that more public by yeah. using something that is on the blockchain and that is more like public for that. And you can also connect that to your social media collection now. And not only do you get to share that with other people, you have security that that's like you actually own like a one-on-one Travis Scott or yeah. one-on-one, you know, the new Jordans, the Chicagos, you know, and yeah. stuff like that.
See, case in point, something yeah. you would actually want a record of.
Yes.
And because like my sneaker collection, like Mark doesn't even know it because I don't have a big enough closet to display it. It would be dope to be like, oh, sick, I can display. And I guess maybe this is so like egotistical of me or like so selfish. I'm like, it'd be sick to share my collection of sneakers with other sneaker collectors. No,
people would want
to
see this collection. Yeah. How many shoes are we talking?
No, not that much. I just have a very small closet, not a big shoe collection. No, I think I have, I don't know, 15. Pairs okay. of sneakers, not a lot.
Okay.
A lot of them are unopened. A lot of them I don't wear anymore, or I've wore a couple of times just for an event.
Did you get stuff those like eBay that. Sneakers you were showing me?
Oh, I wish I did. Okay. Those are super rare. Like that was one of the things. No,
the
like,
remake.
The remakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get one of those?
No, they were super hard to get, and I still can't get them on resellers market. They're just way out of my price range. The most I've ever paid for a pair of sneakers, $600. So I have not paid over $1,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it would be cool to have one proof of my collection, mm-hmm. but then also to have it be public.
I think it'd be cool to get to see a digital collection of your sneakers.
Yeah.
Because now I'm curious. You've shown me some pretty crazy shoes on your phone when I've come in. So
yeah,
I'm curious.
But that's one way. And I think as we just kind of transition to this whole concept that we've been talking about with coffee, with other ways that we can implement it, what's one of the things that is getting you excited to see, hey, this is what we're talking about is kind of the base, like of everything, the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Give me like, I know you can't talk about all your projects. I know that, but give me like an idea, something that to spark in my mind to say, okay, this is a version of untapped potential that we can kind of envision and imagine and be inspired by.
So I work with blockchain tech all day, every day, and have been doing this for a hot second. So at some point, I know this is not a common experience because most people haven't experienced the activations over and over again. But for me, I'm super bored of most use cases of mm-hmm. NFTs and blockchain technology. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. This is just the same thing over and over again. But as the technology becomes more mature, that's what you expect, right? You're like, okay, yes. People have figured out how they want to utilize this. There's a well-worn path for that. Everyone knows how to do it. Here's the guidebook, right? So that's when I tend to get bored with an industry. And what I'm super excited about now is naturally getting to play with everything everyone's coming up with for AI tech. But if I'm being totally honest with you, as someone who works in tech all day, every day, I kind of hate technology. And the thing that I don't hate it. I just really, really, really think it would be cool to come up with ways to facilitate more in-person human interaction. Mm-hmm. And I think as things become more automated, that is the thing that will become the most valuable, right? Because it is harder to recreate this human interaction with the tools that we have available as rapidly as they are evolving. It still doesn't fire all the right neurons for you, you know? And this, like the high touch experience where you're talking about these small farmers who create very, very niche custom coffee, I think at some point that will become so rare and so desirable that they will be compensated properly, right? Mm-hmm. Like it'll get to a point where that will shift because everything else will have been automated away. And what are you going to spend your money on? You want those like high touch experiences because everything else is commonplace. Like I can go talk to a screen or like, even my glasses are high tech. Like I'm surrounded by tech all day, every day.
Yeah.
I want a different experience.
It's interesting. It's almost like it's kind of the opposite of what people are afraid of. It's like the more that tech actually becomes part of our lives, the more we're easily can distinguish something as just being
rare
electronic and something as just being like, oh no, this is like a high touch point.
Yeah, I would say the more luxe this experience is, the in-person.
That's wild.
This is a high-end experience right now.
Yeah,
you know? I know you don't feel that way with the warehouse and everything, but this is hella fancy, right? Yeah. Most people would have to pop open a screen and talk on Zoom for an hour and not get to move and not get to drink some awesome coffee. It's not a great experience that most people are having all day, all the time. So the things that I get really excited about are technologies that let me get people together in person and then enhance that experience. Right. So adding another layer of interactivity on the IRL experience that people are having.
Yeah.
I love that. I think
that's so good.
I think that's a powerful way to actually just wrap up the episode.
Awesome.
Like I just freaking love that.
Cool.
That was extravagant.
That was so good. That's articulated well and just awesome. So thanks for coming on the pod. Yeah. We really appreciate you. We'll definitely see you at the cafe. We'll keep talking about this. Such a good episode. I am super stoked we did this. So thank you.
I appreciate you guys so much. I appreciate that you transformed my opinion of coffee. Changed my life. Now I scour the planet for good coffee and I never find it. And then I have to come back home and get a latte from you. So
perfect.
Yeah, I appreciate you both so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you so much for joining us once again on another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Sessions podcast. Why did my voice change all of a sudden?
I don't know.
I hate that.
You sound very business right
now. I know. I hate it. Guys, oh God, no. Oh, geez.
All right, cheers.
Cheers.
Yes, cheers. Let's go. Cheers. To decaf coffee. Yeah. Yes. Decaf coffee that I actually like without milk.
Wow. All righty, that's a wrap, folks.